Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 323. Continuing our pockets of ADP to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. Pocket three for us, ADP 150 to 200. We'll talk a little bit of recent news and our normal just, you know, gabbing throughout the show. But before we get to all that, you can find me on Twitter at BDEntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/Bubba Bloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at Ryan BHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How are we doing, my friend?
Doing pretty good. I feel like this should be our labor mixed live stream episode. Unfortunately, that was on Monday night, last night, so could not stream it. It was interesting. Like, it was weird not streaming the draft, but it was so much easier. Not saying I drafted well, whatever, but just like the logistics of draft day when you're not streaming. You had barf over the weekend, this past weekend, kind of the same deal. In a weird way, it was kind of nice to just be able to kind of focus on the draft and focus on my team and what other teams are doing. So we had that going on last night. Listener leagues are going strong today. Sheep streamed tonight's auction. We got three more to go. We've got, who's streaming our last three to round us out?
TDK on Wednesday, Spencer Thurman on Thursday, and Lucas Beery on Friday Night Lights with Lucas Beery.
So we'll get that going. I guess since our last show, I had my stream Friday night, and
yes,
wow,
you did. Yes, that he was did. Soft as long. Charmin soft up in that place.
Charmin soft room, and put me on tilt. It was. I would say it was fun, but I was hitting the bourbon by the reserve round, so that should tell you something.
Yes, it was a good time. It was definitely the complete polar opposite of most drafts we've seen, according to the ADP tracker. So that's good to know that you just have to be ready, because like we said in the auction primer, and we've said it many other times, is be ready to pivot, because every single auction is different, and this one was very different. So if you were a Stars and Scrub drafter that night, things went okay. Like Jason Wanick, looking at you. So
there is literally a line for our Patreon subscribers, for you guys that have access to the ADP tracker, which also has average auction values, AAV. There is literally a line of green for one of the auctions. Green means it was a min pick, and like literally almost the entire top 20 when you pull up the page is min picks, and that was all in my league. It's kind of funny to actually look at it for those of you who
it's real funny
who support the show and have access to the tracker. Check that out. That was that green one was my auction. It was nuts.
Players $20 and above, at least 80%, I think, went green. It's pretty good stuff there. So it goes to show, and that's why these streams are fun to kind of learn something from, as they're all different, and we'll have to see how the last three go, and that'll be year three of the listener leagues in the books, which is pretty sweet to see those keep going strong and going from there. So yeah, if you're into that kind of stuff and you want to start thinking ahead to 2027, you got to be a Patreon member to get in those leagues. So just remember that. Check out the Patreon. You get all the cool stuff and things that we have over there, including the ADP tracker, your team trackers, you name it. Ryan's got a projection aggregator. He has so many cool tools. And the best part is it doesn't just end during draft season. Ryan continues to develop stuff in season. We have we use our free agent. I call it our free agent tracker for each week's fab run, our fab tracker, whatever you want to call it.
The planner. He's got
the planner. See, there you go. See, he's got the words. I just got the gibberish. We got the lineups, like the projections for the schedule for like 2 weeks out type deal. All kinds of cool tools that Ryan puts together, plus the minor league board, and which I still use. I use it for my HQPT tomorrow columns, even today. So it's like it's all valuable stuff that's all sitting right there if you're a Patreon member, not to mention news and notes, and much, much more, as low as $7 a month if you want to come check it out. So come join the fun.
If you like the show, you want more of us, we do some bonus videos on there as well. The Discord community is awesome. So if you want to support the show, we would greatly appreciate you having to come join us and hang with us through those other channels. So we appreciate everyone who already is a Patreon member. It's been a ton of fun getting that going, and bigger and better things in the future, man.
Yep, bigger and better as always. John Wilder is in the chat. He had his auction tonight. Says drafting an auction sounds fun until you're 4 hours in and on tilt. See? If it took you 4 hours to get on tilt, I call that a victory, John.
But he knowing Wilder, he was on tilt probably 30 minutes in. So He's one of the all-time trash talkers in our Discord and in our live streams. That shows the fun of our community. But hope you had fun tonight, John.
Yep, always enjoy to chatting it up with John. So good stuff there. A little bit of news and notes. Nothing too crazy, I think, at this point in time. Joe Ryan had an MRI on his back. It shows no serious injuries, just lower back tightness. Going to be reevaluated here, hopefully, in the next few days. Haven't heard anything updated since the MRI, but is that doing anything to you on draft day, Ryan?
It's not for me. It's funny. I feel like this is now the poster boy for early spring injuries that just get over analyzed to death, where we think it's related to his, you know, back injury from 2 years ago or an oblique. I saw some of that kind of speculation on Twitter. I don't think this is a big deal. Let's see, you know, a week or two from now, if Joe Ryan's still not doing anything, maybe my concern heightens. But for now, I feel like this is one where you're just kind of working out the kinks, quite literally, in late February. We've still got over a month to go before the season. So this kind of stuff, where they're obviously not even going to try and push Joe Ryan, they got the MRI back. Like, I'm not that worried.
Yeah, not too worried. As far as I can tell, they haven't even taken him off the Team USA yet. So that should have been the first sign if there's something serious to be concerned about. Not to mention, you know, Scoobles making one start, Skeens and Webb, so they're only making two starts. So if the team makes it to the finals, I don't know who the starting pitchers are for the Team USA, which is a
whole bullpen game. Dodger style. Let's do it.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan.
I'm trying to get them riled up, people. I already got them riled up before the show. Yeah. You all should have seen that, but I'll keep fighting the good fight as we progress through the evening.
Yeah, something like that. Merrill Kelly, he has also been shut down with the low back injury. Going to shut him down for a week and get reevaluated. The D-backs don't seem too concerned. Again, I know Dr. Dave would think we're being naive by this, but I'm going to kind of wait and see. These veteran pitchers, I'm not too worried about as long as they're taking the bump here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, agreed. I can't say what I just said about Joe Ryan and not apply it to Merrill Kelly. Though I will add, I mean, Merrill Kelly is 37, so
he isn't old.
He is like us, so there is maybe some of that. But until we get more information, it's not really too much to go off of. I'm maybe dropping Merrill Kelly just a little bit just because I like some other options there in drafts, but it's not because I'm super concerned about Merrill Kelly. Just need to wait it out and see what else we get.
Reese Hoskins signs a minor league deal with the Cleveland Guardians. We were hoping Reese's Pieces would sign a deal one of these days. We kind of had rumors that, you know, Bryce Harper wanted to bring him back to Philadelphia, so on and so forth. But honestly, Reese in Cleveland makes a lot of sense because they need some more thump in that lineup and they need a first baseman because you just move Manzardo to DH. Like, it works actually really well.
It works, but like probably as a platoon, if he even, again, it's a minor league deal. So I don't know, but this is one of the teams where it would be, you know, it could work. I was personally rooting for Colorado.
Well,
I think we have on the rundown, Blaine Crim got hurt today. So like, kind of wonder what the market was for Reese Hoskins, but I don't know. We'll see. I think Reese Hoskins, I've taken him in a couple of like just late draft and holds just because I still think he's semi-decent. Was not bad last season before. I think it was a thumb injury after the first couple months of the season. So I still think there's something left in the tank. If Reese Hoskins can kind of get regular playing time in Cleveland, and yeah, it's not the deepest lineup to your point. So it could be a good fit. Still not drafting him in fab leagues, though, I don't think.
Yeah, no, he's not on my fab watch just yet, unless something dramatically changes in the coming weeks. For one of my last drafts, not a main concern for me, but definitely someone to monitor. And I could see in a 15-league auction, right up in that 50-team auction, not a bad reserve pick or a dollar just corner infield punt to save some cash, see where it goes. I could see some options there. Mickey Moniak has oblique tightness. He's supposed to take batting practice later this week. If some people are Mickey fans, some aren't. You know, we know the platoon stories we've talked about a million times, but he'll be back later this week. And I'll combine it with Blaine Crim, who did leave the game on Monday after swinging and injuring his oblique. This sounds a little more serious than Mickey's, but they haven't given like an MRI result just yet.
Yeah, the Mighty Crim sounds a little bit more serious. Who is the... Oh, Troy Johnston.
Jeez. Yeah, a guy that I took in some DCs, and people are like, oh, no, he's in the mall. Well, things might have just changed right about now. Or Charlie Condon, who went deep on Tuesday, maybe forces their hand even sooner.
That's right. The dog fans in our Discord would be thrilled with that. I mean, Krim wasn't really draftable anyways. Mickey Moniak, oblique scared the hell out of me. There's not a history of oblique injuries with Mickey Moniak. According to the forecaster, it was a hand and finger in 2022, some lower back tightness in 2023. That's all Mickey Moniak has for his IL stint. So got to monitor it, but just kind of hope Mickey Moniak gets back in the games and this doesn't turn into a obviously lower profile, but doesn't turn into a Gunnar Henderson situation where it just lingers and lingers and lingers. And I mean, that does tend to happen with oblique. So we will monitor, as they say.
We will monitor indeed. This one's a little more serious, I think. Brandon Woodruff is working his way up, but to get ready for the season, but opening day is up in the air. And that's his own words, folks, just throwing that one out there. I wanted to mention that over, you know, on the ADP tracker, the last 7 days in 12-team fab leagues, his ADP is 116, but two of the last four drafts, 128 and 130, which would be the lowest he has gone in the last 20 drafts in 12s. I was already kind of wondering why his price was where it was, because I felt like innings were always a concern with Woodruff. What are your thoughts when you hear him flat out say, opening day is not a guarantee, basically?
I mean, it's not great. Right. Yeah. At all. I'm always going to root for Kyle Harrison, who's in AAA down there, like as a potential.
We're doing this all over again. New team, same problem. Get us our
ready. Bad preview, folks. Every Thursday, I'm going to freaking say Kyle Harrison.
Dollar bid.
I probably should not bring up Kyle Harrison on February 24th. But yeah, I'm off of Woodruff. We've both been off of Woodruff. This does nothing to change that. I don't know how serious this is either. I do understand, like, this is an old, they need Brandon Woodruff for the entire season. It makes sense for them. I don't know if slow play is the right word, but like, there's no reason why does Brandon Woodruff have to pitch, you know, on opening day. Don't think it's a huge deal, but it, I don't know. It's just one other kind of data point against Brandon Woodruff and someone who we're both like, I'm just worried about Brandon Woodruff at his age, given his injury history, making it through the season. Like this news bit doesn't really change that. It's just, that's my general concern with Woodruff and why I've been off of him. So if anything, this news kind of sucks, because like you said, his price is going quite a bit later now. And I would like guys that I don't like to go earlier in drafts.
Yep, as Adam says in the chat. So it's a Logan Henderson update then. Possibly. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got would like to see no Logan Henderson updates this spring, but along the lines of no news is good news with him.
Chandler Simpson update. Talked about last week. He had the hamstring injury. He's supposed to return to game action Friday if his rehab continues to go well. Still a hamstring injury, and drafters have taken it pretty seriously. ADP is 174 over the last 7 days in 12 teamers. But man, you look at a range of, you know, 247, 207, 190. Like, people are they're waiting on their Chandler Simpson right now.
As they should. We are big Chandler Simpson fades, and obviously any type of lower leg injury is a death knell for Chandler Simpson. So just not someone we're taking either way.
And then the last bit of news here, it's kind of a twofold thing. Treya Savage is still at least a week away from game action in the Grapefruit League, as they're taking him slowly due to extra innings he pitched last year. And then later in the day, the Jays came out and said that Treya Savage will be in a strict innings limit. Now, we've heard that before. Believe it when you see it, things. But I kind of believe it a little bit, because you have Ricky Tiedemann, who might be hurt yet again. They need their young arms, essentially. So Treya Savage, you and I haven't been in on anyways, but ADP of 145 over the last 7 days.
And we didn't see what the strict innings limit actually means, right? We just said it would be strict. So I don't really know what that means. I mean, Savage threw 140 innings last year across all levels. Like, I wouldn't imagine the Jays are going to strict innings limit him below that. That doesn't seem like it would make sense. But you still have a strict innings limit and still go 150 to 160. Like that, both things can be true. I'm trying to paint the glass half full picture for folks that like you, Savage. But until we see what the actual limit is, I would plan for 150, 160 and go from there.
Yeah, 160 was the first one that came to mind for me as well. All right, that does it for the news and notes. Let's get into ADP pocket number 3, 150 to 200. Ryan, what are we looking at tonight?
All right. same recourse as our last two pocket episodes. I'm not going to comp this one to an actual pocket in your pants. So it has been pretty cool over the last 5 days to hear listeners' phone wallet key situation. A lot of people have some passionate opinions about that. So that's been kind of cool. So 150 to 200. Where do I start? Start with closers. I always like to start with closers. You're definitely starting to see the lack of volume with closers here. There are four closers going in the 150 to 200 range. That is Dennis Santana, Abner Uribe, Ryan Walker, and Griffin Jacks. So maybe there are two closers and two half closers. It's probably a better way to put that. Griffin Jacks is rising at ADP of 198. He is rising because of the
hell is Edwin Useta.
Useta, that's right. Useta shoulder injury. So Jacks is going a little bit more expensive. But you do have at least a stab at two who we think are full-time closers with Dennis Santana and Ryan Walker. For me on the hitting side, we've talked about this on our outfield show. This is a really strong outfield pocket. And I've seen this in drafts. You've seen this in drafts. I think you even mentioned it. You were talking about your barf draft.
Yep.
Pepper in the Discord, cereal. Right? Yeah. Yep. Where I think you'd waited on outfield and took like Jacob Marcy as your first outfielder.
Yeah. Yes. And then I got at least two or three in this range. Yes.
Right. And then, yeah, because someone was like, oh, how do you feel about your outfield? And I remember you responded. It was like, I can kind of destroy this pocket with good outfield options. And that's what we see here. Like I really like, to kind of go down the list, Brandon Nimmo, this is from most expensive to cheapest ADP from 150 to 200. Brandon Nimmo, Taylor Ward, Brenton Doyle, we both love. Dylan Cruz, Stephen Kwan, we both like. Chandler Simpson, we don't. Mike Trout, But Ian Happ, Jurickson Profar a little bit later on in this pocket. Like I think you can grab, and I have grabbed multiple outfielders from this group in drafts and honestly felt pretty good about it, especially because once we get to the next show on Thursday night, the 200 to 250 pocket, that's when we see outfield start to see that cliff kind of come into picture. So on the hitting side, that's probably my biggest thing is I like a lot of the outfielders going in this group.
Yeah, I'll stick with the hitting for a second here. A lot of outfielders for sure. It's also the kind of the end of the catcher two tier for me. So you kind of want to have your, for me, unless you're just punting the second one, which I've done, like in barf, I ended up with, didn't like intentionally do it, but I didn't feel like overpaying. I ended up with Carlos Narvaez as my catcher two. So I will be paying the wire for a catcher two if something pops up. But I wanted to get my outfielders instead, to the point Ryan made earlier. So catcher kind of got pushed to the side on this one. But this is kind of the end of the catcher two if you're a little more aggressive on catchers for me. Yeah, it's also kind of, you're getting towards the end of the first base world as well. Because you have your Wilson Contreras, your Alec Burleson, but then you have Aranda and Torkelson in this range. So you might have a couple more in the next pocket we talk about, but most of your first basemen, at least that I feel comfortable with, are disappearing as well. So that's a couple things here. You still have decent power in this range, a few steals guys, but things are slowly moving towards the three category instead of four category options in the hitting world, where on the pitching side, I wanted to mention ratios be damned is where we're going here. Everybody's above four pretty much for the most part. There's a handful. Most of them are the closers. There's a few starters in the threes. And then most of your whip is you're approaching Bubba territory here. So ratios are starting to quickly disappear. It's, I guess, more on taking your chance on upside in the pitching world in this range. Not, you don't have to completely punt it, but tell yourself a story on, can this guy improve from these projections?
Yeah, the starting pitching market here is interesting to me because I fully agree with everything you just said. And these projections are three or four different systems on Fangraphs that are all combined into one. And this kind of goes in line. I was listening to the new FBGT, Fantasy Baseball Game Theory podcast, with our buddy Mark S. And he made the really good point a couple episodes ago, just how ratios just go in the toilet as you get later in drafts. And we're seeing that in this pocket. The interesting thing for me is like, I actually like a lot of the starting pitchers, and I disagree with and pitching projections, you know, whatever. A lot of noise in there, but like I actually, from an actual skill standpoint, there are at least a handful of starting pitchers that I have been, I won't say all over in drafts, but some of them I have been all over in drafts. So it's somewhere I just I don't really agree with the projection. I like the skills, and so I'm targeting quite a few starting pitchers in this group, despite the projections that make my team tracker look no good on the surface. But you got to believe in the projections you're using.
Yeah, that's what I tell myself every draft, the way I wait on pitching. I'm just believing in myself on these, not so much the projections, but like that was a big thing in the Barf draft. My pitching was, I just hate reaching for pitching. And that's the difference between 15s and 12s. 12s, I know I can navigate out of it. 15s, trickier, much trickier. And that's continually my bugaboo. That's why I think I'd rather auction 15s and I'll snake 12s all day long. At least in the 15 auction, I can get a couple starters I like to build around and go from there. So we'll see. Any other takeaways in these pockets before we start kind of talking ADP, targets, fades, and more?
Last thing I noticed, I felt this in the labor draft on Monday night for maybe the first time. But so I started with second pick. So I had Judge, and then I took Devers as my third hitter. So I was a little bit behind in speed. And I panicked a little bit at this point in the draft. And just looking, now I kind of see why. Looking down the, and again, for our YouTube viewers, this is all color-coded, these projections. Looking down the stolen base column, yes, there are some stolen base options, but there's not many of them. There's maybe five guys projected for over 20 steals. And two of them are Chandler Simpson and Xavier Edwards.
Two guys, right? Don't
so
draft.
Like, I'm not saying do not draft those guys, but like, it's like those guys I'm not drafting, just because they are kind of those rabbits, those one trick, maybe two trick ponies. So I, and then Jenny Butler, of course, took Bryson Stott, who's my guy, way above ADP, as she should. And so I had a hard time picking up speed at this point in the draft. So there's something that I noticed in labor last night, and then that looking at the board right now kind of reinforces that there's not many speed options that are good in other categories here.
And that kind of goes back to when you mentioned I peppered the outfield for Barf. I had plenty of speed early in my draft where Ryan felt different. That's why I was okay right. Sitting in this world where I was cool with like Ian Happ and, you know, Dylan Cruz runs a lot, but like other options in this range wasn't as worried about because of what I did earlier in the draft in the steals department. So all depends on how you build the team.
Quick comment here, since I don't know if you put him in the rundown or not, but Keegan in the chat mentions the elephant in the room, Connor Griffin, who comes in at the, I thought he was at the bottom. Yeah, there he is. Comes in at the bottom of this list, ADP 199. Keegan says, and another is Connor Griffin, who might not make the opening day roster, which is true. Connor Griffin also may not be on this sheet if we did this time next week. If he is on the opening day roster, is like a top 100 pick. So Connor Griffin is technically on this list, but I think either way, we'll not have a 200 ADP as we get closer to opening day.
Yeah, the helium is real.
Bonkers today, man. The spring training February victory laps, just out in full force, all over the place. I loved it. Bring it on.
Yep. But it's one of those, like, we kind of joked about pitchers we didn't want to draft falling down because of injury. Well, neither of us really are in on Connor Griffin. So, people, please move him up your draft board. Like, zero complaints in this world. Like, again, we might be totally wrong on this one, but we'll see. A Spore in the chat says Connor Griffin has at best a 7% chance to make the opening day roster. Bro has 21 double A games, just too soon. That's like a huge argument Ryan mentioned when we, spoiler alert, if you listen to this on Wednesday, the new tool shed pod should drop that Ryan and I were on. And Connor Griffin's name came up in there, and that was a big discussion point, was the double A, like really no experience at the triple A level yet. You don't have to. We've seen guys jump them. Jackson Churio looking at you. But usually you see, especially the Pirates, they will milk that.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, they didn't last year or anything with Bubba Chandler, right?
Yep. Just another Bubba getting held down by the man. Just how it goes. So, we'll see about that one on Wednesday as well. But
I don't know how to respond to that, man. That's that was damn depressing. Jesus.
Yeah. Keegan in the chat says might still be worth it even if he's not up until May, just to avoid spending all your fab on him. Yeah, as Paul says in the NFBC, that's tricky to stash a guy hoping he comes up in May, because it was like the conversation with Bubba last year and everything. It's, well, I've held him this long, like, here we go. Yeah, and you just keep doing that dance and doing that dance, and yeah. We'll see. And Adam says, Pirates are the Angels of the East, winning, not in our top five. I'll argue that a bit because I like the improvements they did to that roster. I think they're going to be much more competitive this year than people think. So we shall see. All right. Let's talk about some ADP battles. Bloomfield, kick us off with your first one on the board. This is a good one because I like both these guys.
Yeah, so that's why I picked it. Again, these ADP battles are not kind of forced debates between me and Bubba. These really are just kind of us talking through similar prices, of course, but either similar players, similar positions, whatever. I've got Brenton Doyle versus Dylan Cruz, who are going pretty much right next to each other at outfield. I like both of them. And to my comment earlier about this being, you know, a really ripe pocket for outfielders, these are two reasons why, right? Because I really like Doyle. I really like Cruz. ADPs of 160 and 163, very similar projections. Doyle projected for 21 steals, 24 steals for Cruz, 19 homers for Doyle, 17 for Cruz, and maybe 10 points for batting average for Brenton Doyle on top of Dylan Cruz. I don't know. I think like I'm ending, if I had to pick one or the other, and typically you're having to do that unless you're in an auction because you're making this one choice and a 12 or 15 teamer and the other one probably won't make it back to you. I think I'm going Brenton Doyle. I think you can make the case that Dylan Cruz has the higher ceiling. I would probably come back at that with maybe, but not for 2026. And I think we've already, you know, we've seen what Brenton Doyle can do in the majors. It was in 2024. He had 30 steals. He hit 23 home runs and hit 260. Like, I feel like for Cruz, that's a 80th, 85th percentile outcome for Dylan Cruz. Again, for 2026, Dylan Cruz long-term is the better play. But I feel like you're kind of wishing that Dylan Cruz gets to a level that Brenton Doyle's already done. And we've talked about Brenton Doyle himself a bunch on the pod, just really bad luck on the field, of course, last year in the first half, but then having some personal family issues that are pretty tragic as well back in April, kind of snapped back to 2024 version of Brenton Doyle in the second half last year. So I like both of them. I have a slight nod to Brenton Doyle just because he's done it before in the majors.
All right, that's fair. We've seen it. We believe it. We also, he said we talked about it a million times of why we think he can be back. That 23-30 season when he hit 260 is only two seasons away, not that far away. Still went 15-18 last year, and all things were not great in his favor. So, yeah, I can see the appeal there. I also think there's a tremendous ceiling with Dylan Cruz. Tried to open his page. It's not opening right now. So, just look at his projection, 238, 17, and 24. I think that's a great floor for Dylan Cruz, and it's one of those, if he can just up his batting average a bit, that just continues to translate into a guy that I think won't be very far off of Brenton Doyle. Now, to your point, we haven't seen it before. It was some struggles last season. Injuries also aided to that, I believe, but horrific BABIP as well for Dylan Cruz last year. So there's a lot of things pointing in market improvements for Dylan Cruz, same for Brenton Doyle, can be made. So both very, very fitting cases. So yeah, I like both. I took Dylan Cruz in BARF. Brenton Doyle was already taken. Couldn't take him in that draft. I would likely take Doyle over Cruz for the reasons we've seen it before. But I think if you're playing the ceiling play like I was in that draft where I was behind an outfield and I wanted to take kind of a boost at the same time, like, Dylan Cruz fits the mold for what I'm trying to put together on that roster. So zero problems with either one of them. I lean Doyle as well, but like I said, I got shares of both, and it doesn't bother me either direction.
Yep.
All right. This one was a bit interesting to me as well, because Wilson Contreras loses catcher eligibility, and it just seems like the world forgets he could still hit a baseball. I don't think he should be, you know, a top 100 pick potentially, but at the same time, seeing Wilson Contreras at 175 was a tad bit shocking. He's going at 175. Alec Burleson's going at 177. Like, Wilson Contreras last year, 20 homers, 5 ribbies, 257. Not a bad season. I guess that's what he's doing at a catcher. So at first base, that might push him down a bit. Burleson, 18 homers, 5 steals, 290. So better batting average, 2 less home runs than Wilson Contreras. Very, very similar profiles between the two. One is much older. One is much younger. One has actually played on a good team in Boston. One plays on what might be the worst team in baseball, in the Cardinals. Yeah. It's a very interesting dichotomy here is if you believe Burleson's going to be able to benefit on that roster, or if Wilson Contreras kind of gets a little rejuvenation on this team in Boston. So I lean Wilson Contreras between the two personally, but I can understand the Burleson argument for those that do like him.
I think Burleson's better. I like the batting average floor, and I think the power for Burleson is good enough. Like, he had 20 expected home runs on the 18 homers last year. So, like, in a vacuum, I'd probably go Burleson, but you make a good point on the team context, man. Like, apologies to Cardinals listeners, although, hell, you probably agree with this statement. They look terrible this year. And I don't know about Alec Burleson. Like, I mean, the double-edged sword of that is Alec Burleson's probably hitting third or fourth or second, maybe, depending on how they do it. So you're going to get a lot of at-bats, but like, runs and RBI on that team, it's brutal. It's not even, to me, like a team that, like the Marlins, we were talking about the Marlins earlier with Cross. Like, at least there's like a small sliver of the lineup that's good. I don't even know if the Cardinals. Oh no, I zoomed in again with the AI camera, dude. I did the small sliver thing.
Yep.
Can we get it back? Oh man, I'm hosed.
This is great. It's the highlight of the offseason so far, folks. This
every camera, what? Yeah. Every five or six shows.
Yep. Then it ruins him for the rest of the show.
There he is. Zoomed it out. You see that? Little pinch out.
All it takes, a little pinch.
I don't even remember where I was at, man. The freaking camera screwed me up again.
Bad team, Cardinals.
It's truly just like anyone hitting right around Alec Burleson. It's just tough for runs and RBIs. So, I don't know, man. I don't have a strong opinion either way on this, honestly. The cop-out answer might be if you need batting average to go Burleson, but I don't even know if that's much of a deciding factor either.
And I'm just going to mention, like, the batting average, yeah, he hit 290 last year, but it was 269, 244 the years before.
Yeah, true.
With Wilson, like, it's been 257, 262, 264. Had some rough years before that, but I don't think, like, Burleson had a massive BABIP jump last year. He's probably still a better average, like 275, which he's projected for, I could see. Like, I get it. It's as hard as he hits the baseball. But I don't think the gap is as large between the two. I think it's more just – does the 34-year-old in Boston hold up better than the 27-year-old in St. Louis? And what context do you believe in? Is where I go there. At least that's for me, speaking for myself. And I think I'm gonna take Wilson on that one. We saw what he did to Trevor Story last year, for crying out loud. To stay healthy and run production will be in bunches in Boston. So I'm in. All right, what's your next one?
We got a three-way. We got a threesome here with Bubba Chandler, Nathan Eovaldi and Sandy Alcantara, all with the exact same ADP. So that's why I decided to go with the menage a trois of these three, and also just different types of profiles. So like Chandler, I think if you're truly shooting for upside and ceiling, Bubba Chandler is probably the pick. And I think there's a very good case to be. This is a point in the draft where you need to kind of shift your thinking from boring old man mode, which is usually what I'm in, even though I took O'Neill Cruz in labor last night. You need to kind of shift that thinking to, like, this is the part in the draft where you need to kind of take some shots and hit on these breakouts. That's, in my opinion, what truly wins leagues, is getting 2, 3, 4 of these true breakouts from this part of the draft. And if that's your goal, I think Bubba Chandler's your guy. Did look kind of rough command wise in his most recent spring start.
Did you hear about that?
Did not.
He came, I think it was Tuesday morning, he was getting interviewed, and he said he had trouble sleeping, barely got any sleep because he was so excited for his first spring start. He says it's a sleep mechanics change, is what his terminology was. Believe what you wish. If he's getting hyped up over this, I'm really concerned actually for other things, but maybe he's just excited to know, like, hey, I don't have to go back to AAA this year.
My kids could use some sleep mechanic changes. That would be helpful.
You never know. Maybe they're just excited to see you every morning.
Yeah, they are. Except it's dark out still. Oh, God. That's interesting. I did not read that about Bubba Chandler. So yeah. I don't know.
Believe what you wish.
But that's whatever. Maybe he was out, you know.
That's where I was leading. He's probably somewhere in, like, you know, West Palm Beach or something, having a good old time.
Fun down there. He's a young
guy. And he went to 11 and celebrated with the Olympic team. I don't know.
There we go. So like, yeah, I think Bubba Chandler's the pure ceiling play with, I don't even like, yeah, I guess there's a floor, there, but it's a ceiling play, but it's not just a pure spec. I think this will surprise nobody. I think Nate Eovaldi's still my pick. It definitely will be my pick. If Nate Eovaldi looks good, velocity looks good this spring. That's someone who I was honestly a little bit out on last year until spring training when I saw the velocity was good for Eovaldi, and at late drafts, I scooped them up. And then you've got Sandy, who, I don't know, man. Like, yes, the second half was a lot better once the command seemingly got a little bit better. But lowest ceiling of this trio. But I also, I don't know if he has the highest floor of the trio either. Like, I don't know if Sandy's the safest play of this group. Like, I'd rather roll the dice with Bubba Chandler or the Eovaldi health. And if it doesn't work out or they get hurt, you know, try and fix that up with a reserve or in the wire. Whereas Sandy, like specifically last year, early last year, like you had him in your lineup all the time and it was killing you.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with pretty much all of that. Bubba is the guy for me. You have to have at least two pitchers, at least two, maybe three, that you feel very comfortable with at the time. Because taking a shot at Bubba, having him be your SP4 would be awesome. SP3 doable. Just knowing that if something goes wrong, it's not going to crush you right out the gate. But the ceiling could take you to a whole new level. I think the skills are that good. I am a Bubba Chandler believer. I know it hasn't been shown at the big league level, but I still am there. I agree Eovaldi is the best pitcher here, but it's just the year-in, year-out tradition of what how many innings do we get from Nathan Eovaldi, I guess is the best way to put that. What's the recipe for that success? And then Sandy, like, it's a great story. Does he make an improvement off of, you know, a year removed from after 1 year of pitching post-Tommy John? Do we see the improvements? We've seen that documented many times. He's also an older version of this Tommy John situation. So, and to me, it never really showcased too much sustained success last year, even after a full season. So I'd probably go Eovaldi, Bubba, and Sandy out of the three on this one. I really don't think I have any Sandy shares yet, to be totally honest.
Yeah, I don't either. I think it's close between Bubba and Eovaldi, but then Sandy's a tear down for me.
Yeah, no, I totally get that as well. All right, real Whoa. Quick in the chat.
E-Man, is that right? 30 pitches and threw 6 strikes?
Yeah, no, he was all over the place. That's why he was blaming it on his lack of sleep. It was brutal. He had no command at all.
Do you know how bad that is? Like 6 strikes on 30 pitches?
That's a fifth of his pitches were strikes. That's 20%.
Oh.
That's an 80% ball rate, Ryan. You love that stat.
That's an 80% ball rate.
Yeah. Look at this guy over here. Gotcha.
Better get those sleep mechanics locked in. Jesus.
Yeah, but otherwise he's going to be pitching in double A. Or he's going to be in the Alec Manoah program. So I have to get that one figured out, really. He'll be in Anaheim before you know it, folks.
You see the Manoah quotes today?
Oh, no. Like, I thought his velocity was up, but what?
Well, no, like the Angels don't have radar guns to track his velocity.
All the money went into the
I know I'm somewhat misquoting this, but I did see some chatter about that.
So Manoah. It's the same pitching program as the Braves and Shriders on the mound. Got it.
Yeah, it was tough. I'm sure Preppis was happy with the report. Should have tagged Preppis, him. Made his Preppis day.
He's always happy. Don't you worry about that. All right, my final ADP debate here is another pitching one. Edward Cabrera versus Tanner Bibee. It's kind of, I guess, ceiling versus hope. That's what I'm going to go with here. It's like Edward Cabrera is a pitcher that many of us have had high hopes for, but combination of health and just lack of command has been a major issue when it comes to Edward Cabrera. We saw kind of some really sustained success at points last season, which gave some big optimism. Like the second half was really good for Edward Cabrera. We know how good he can be in the strikeout world, and that's what you kind of want to go with him. It comes down to walks. He's also in a new atmosphere in Wrigley, which could be good or bad. Depends on how you want to look at that. And then you have Tanner Bibee, a pitcher that I've expressed my annoyances so many times on this show about the pitch mix, the options they use. and it continues to just fall on deaf ears because honestly, why would they listen to me? But his second half was putrid. It was first half started out looking kind of optimistic, like things were going to get better. Second half just did not come to fruition whatsoever. And I don't know. Like, I still have hope someday that he'll get there. But to me, it's hope with Bibee and like an actual ceiling talent with Edward Cabrera. And they're going pretty much right next to each other at 185 and 189. And Cabrera's projection is actually pretty nice as well. I think there's actually more strikeouts there, but that's based on the innings they haven't projected to pitch. Right. So what are your thoughts on this Cabrera versus Bibee situation?
It's weird. I was just thinking, like, if these guys were hitters, I'd take Tanner Bibee because I'm always going to go the guy with the track record who can rebound to it. But I think pitchers can just change quicker than hitters can. And what I saw from Bibee last year was truly horrific. The fastball, I think just the fastball has major issues, and I don't know if that's if Tanner Bibee can get back to what we saw. I mean, certainly he can, right? He's young enough. It's one bad year. That's the case for Tanner Bibee. But I'm going to go with Edward Cabrera. I think Edward Cabrera has a ceiling that Tanner Bibee does not. I think we saw some very impressive walk rate improvements from Edward Cabrera last year that were supported by ball percentage. League average ball percentage is 36%, not 80. And Edward Cabrera was right at 35-36% last year. So for someone that had really awful control for pretty much most of his career, got the walk rate down to single digits to 8%. It was 6% in the second half with a major uptick in swinging strikes. I know there were some elbow issues late in the year, but like if you're shooting on ceiling here, I think Edward Cabrera is the one to do it. I don't have any evidence for this either, but I feel like the trade to Chicago, at least medically, probably checks out. The Cubs were, you know, seemingly happy enough to take on the injury risk with Edward Cabrera. And if they're happy enough to do it, then I will oblige. So I'm going to take Edward Cabrera by quite a bit over Tanner Bibee, though I have neither in drafts because the legend goes right before them, which we'll talk about later.
The legend, we shall mention him shortly. And a target of yours. So let's get into the targets, Ryan. Let's rehash one of the players already discussed.
Yeah, Shota. I'm gonna pull up my player shares.
We mixed it up.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll do it. We'll just stay on the since I just referred to him as the legend. This is do not try this at home, folks. But in my 12 NFBC drafts that I've done, woo! I've taken 9 Shotas. I have 75% player shares of Shota, which is too much. A little bit over. I don't know what the hell the word is, but overexposed. It's a weird word. But
overstimulated, overexposed.
Definitely overstimulated by Shota. We all know that. I think the value is the price is awesome. I think we don't look at WHIP nearly enough. I think Shota is a WHIP legend just because the fly balls. Yes, that introduces home run risk, but it also kind of locks in a really good WHIP if you've got the control that Shota Imanaga has. Projections I don't agree with. It's a 115 WHIP. Guy's got like basically a career one WHIP through two seasons, so I'm gonna lean on that a little bit more. And he's pretty durable, right? Two basically full seasons, missed 2 months last year with a hamstring early in the season, so I don't really hold that against him. We'll see spring training wise. He could be a helium guy if the velocity looks better, because that was the main thing against Shota in 2025 was the swinging strikes were down and the velocity was down for Shota. It was a 90.9 mile an hour fastball last season, 91.6 in Shota's first year. I think he was throwing 93, 94, and again, a very abbreviated spring training outing, but that could be a good sign too.
Yeah, it was abbreviated, but definitely a good sign to see if hopefully this can continue on, to your point, and go on. So I don't have much to add to Shota. I'm a big fan with you on that one. I don't have nearly as many shares.
Would you recommend a 75% player share of someone going in the top 200?
In the top 200, no. I usually prefer to wait till like pick 500 and beyond with the guys not even signed to Major League Baseball right now.
The Patrick Corbins of the world.
You said it, I did not, but yes.
Oh, damn it. You traded me into that, didn't you?
You always blame me. Gotcha.
We kind of have a side beer bet. Who's going to bring up Patrick Corbin first?
Drinking game. Shotgun a beer when that name gets mentioned on the show. So, I like Shota quite a bit. I'll stick to pitchers since you went to pitcher first. I'm going to just mention I'm actually very interested in Trevor Rogers. I know it seems like hey, you know, you're buying into last year's. Well, yeah, I am buying into last year because it's also not costing me a premium. His ADP is 169. A guy coming off of last year's season, I feel like in previous seasons would have gone a lot higher than what we're seeing right now with Trevor Rogers. It's been well documented. He was the second best player on the player radar last year behind Kate Horton. I like Rogers much, much more than Kate Horton. Kate Horton's fine, but I believe
he's also, Trevor Rogers. Horton's in this tier as well. He's in this group.
I almost did an ADP debate between the two, but I did not. But yeah, I love everything we saw from Trevor Rogers last year. We saw a pitcher that improved his ratios and the xERA backed up everything we saw from Trevor Rogers. We saw great strikeout skills in the second half, 25% K rate, 18% K to walk. Swinging strike was almost 13%, which is things we want to see. Everything about him was absolutely outstanding. And it feels like, you know, maybe it's not, you know, doable to that extent. I'm not going to be crazy. I'm not expecting a 1.75 ERA. But if you look at his projections coming into the season, his aggregated projections, it's 420, 128, 136. I'll take the under on the ratios, the 420 and the 128. I think he's a high threes ERA. And I believe there's a world where he's more like a 110 whip guy. If we saw 119 in the second half, maybe he is a 120 guy. Maybe I'm wrong in that regard. I think there's a very good skill set there, and I think he's going to improve on what he did last year. Again, I don't think the ratios will be that good, but I think the strikeouts are legit, and now we're going to get a full season of it. So Trevor Rogers is a guy that I am buying in on at this ADP.
Yeah, agree. I think Trevor Rogers beats those projections. I think the projections, again, by definition, right, they're factoring in the bad years of Trevor Rogers. And you can't just ignore the bad years and count on the good ones. But the biggest thing for me is the velocity came back for Trevor Rogers last year. Like, not all the way back to his 2021, I want to say, prime, but it got back to 93. It was down to 91.7 in 2024. So it was nice to see the velocity come back. I've got a little, a little metric here that combines swinging strike, ball rate, and ground ball rate. Last 2 months of last season, Trevor Rogers was the 10th best starting pitcher in baseball of those three metrics kind of combined together. So skills are there for Trevor Rogers. If he can sustain the velocity bump with Baltimore for a full year, I think this is a really good buy. And I agree. Like, he's kind of looped in with Kate Horton given the strong second half. I don't even think it's close between Trevor Rogers and Kate Horton.
So let me just check this real quick. Swinging strike, ball rate, and ground ball rate is your metric?
Yeah.
Called the bloomer or what? Okay, you got to have something. Everyone's naming their metrics now. You need to patent this thing quick.
Yeah, I feel like I'm too busy for that crap. But
It's going to be on TJ's site here pretty soon if you don't. So figure it out. What's your next target?
Let's go Bryce Stott. Bubba's turned red laughing. Shots fired, man.
I just love when I get you to completely shut down. It's the best.
So I mentioned earlier, speed is hard to find at this point. Speed with other contributions at other categories. And Bryson Stott is not only one of those folks that can get you speed, but also give you things in other categories. He's projected on our sheet here for a 255 batting average and 14 homers. So not going to hurt you in either one, honestly. And someone going at second base, which I think is another kind of an island at this. So you have an island in terms of the type of player Bryson Stott is. You have an island in terms of second base, the position. Like, yeah, Matt McClain and Xavier Edwards are going around Bryson Stott. Xavier Edwards, as I mentioned earlier, is kind of a do not draft for me. So Bryson Stott, I try to get Bryson Stott in any draft that I'm waiting on second base. I will jump a round or two for Bryson Stott. I know there's some platoon risk, but platoon risk, it's not even a risk. I mean, it probably is a platoon. It's been there the last couple of years. Bryson Stott's been just fine, even with the platoon. So I really don't even worry about that. He's going to get his plate appearances in a great lineup. I think the price is awesome. And the profile at that position is kind of a unicorn this late in the draft. So love me some Bryson Stott.
And just remember with Stott, who I agree, I love a lot. I've had shares multiple seasons. The platoon can get frustrating, but when injuries took place last year, they had zero problem not platooning him. Like when he went and played shortstop for Trey Turner, and then they moved Edmundo Sosa to second base. Now, maybe they didn't have a qualified option, but they had other right-handed bats in the infield they could have platooned if they really wanted to stick to it. Platoon's my point. And when their quote-unquote options were gone, they had zero problem not forcing someone else in there. So that is at least quasi-positive. If you want to point to him maybe losing a platoon potential, he should be platooned based on the starting roster, but things can change throughout the season. Last year he played a lot more than I think we all expected him to. So that's a plus as well. The hard one I have with him is I like Stott a lot. I have shares of Bryson Stott. I'm starting to try to find my interest in an Ozzie Albies potentially. And that's where I start comparing the two a lot. And Stott goes 20 picks later, essentially. But it's I feel like Ozzie Albies, if we ever see a healthy Albies, that's a big if. I feel like there's definitely a ceiling over Stott there. Yes. But that's a big, what do you want to take the known, Bryson Stott's pretty much put the same seasons up year after year. So you know what you're saying.
There's also been some pretty terrible Ozzie Albies seasons.
100%. So it just depends on your risk reward, profile on that one. But that's just been my only dilemma in drafts, if there's any counterpoints to Bryson Stott. For me, my second one, I professed my love for him on the third base preview. I professed my love for him on the Toolshed pod that drops on Wednesday. And that's Royce Lewis. Just want to keep bringing him up as much as humanly possible before he has a great season. And people said no one talked about him. Well, at least one guy on an independent podcast mentioned him over and over again for you, even if, the man holds us back. But,
man,
Royce Lewis, you got me fired up earlier. You got me fired up earlier. Royce Lewis, ADP of 173. Royce Lewis last year, it's always injury concerns with Royce. There's zero hiding that. But last year we got 431 plate appearances, a career high. In the second half, we saw a brand new Royce Lewis, 11 of his 13 home runs in the second half, all 12 of his stolen bases in the second half. As we've mentioned before, 9 of those stolen bases came in the last month of the season. What does that indicate, Ryan? Healthy legs for Royce Lewis. And that is the most important thing we can think of. Now he has a history of having unhealthy legs. If he gets injured tomorrow with a hamstring injury, will I be surprised? Unfortunately not. But for now, he is healthy, and a healthy Royce Lewis should not be drafted at 173 in a projection of 245, 19, and 11. He had more than 11 stolen. He had 9 stolen bases in 1 month. 11 is, to me, quite low. This is a 2020 guy. I'm more concerned with the power of Royce Lewis than the speed of Royce Lewis. And I think if we get 250, we're getting a 2020 season. And at that price point, at a third base position where you can't find steals outside of J-Ram, essentially, maybe Caleb Durbin, if you want that argument, I'll take Royce Lewis all day.
Yeah, and I think if the lower body's fine, I'm not even that worried about the power either. Obviously it affects the stolen bases, but it's all connected, right? Royce Lewis has theoretically been healthy since last August last year. He's been healthy for 6 months. And he's healthy right now because he came out and stole a base right at the start of spring training. That is huge for me. Keep an eye on Royce Lewis's stolen base attempt rate. A very deep cut advice there. But keep an eye on how often Royce Lewis is running this spring. I think the more he runs, the more confident he is, the more confident the Twins are that he is fully healthy and ready to go. And I think that's huge. So I'm with you, man. It's interesting seeing Royce Lewis right next to Matt Chapman. I feel like that could have been an ADP debate in this one. Yeah, it's true. Just the classic ceiling floor versus steady Eddie. But both of those guys, nice options at third base if you're kind of hurting for one. And given the state of third base, you probably are hurting for one.
All right, who's your third and final target in this range?
Just real quick, good comment from Mr. Cicchini. Interesting to me, at least. Well, to us too, Michael. That Kieschel and Stott have the same AAV, but a 30-plus ADP difference. So that's a lot of acronyms there. But in auctions, Luke Kieschel and Bryson Stott are going for the same price. But in drafts, it's a 2-to-3-round discount or difference between those two. I'm going to take the safe Stott over Kieschel. Any day. Luke Kieschel needs to make it through a season for me to draft him. It's kind of that classic. We say this all the time. If we're wrong on Luke Kieschel this year, that's fine. If he proves us wrong, that's okay.
Agreed.
All right. My last target was going to be Brenton Doyle, but then I realized I put Brenton Doyle as a target and in an ADP debate, which kind of the second rule of Bubba and the Bloom. You don't do that. So I'm going to pivot. We're going to go Jurickson Profar, again, just to highlight how strong outfield is in this pocket. Trixon Profar came back second half last year after the PED suspension, hit 248, 14 homers, 9 steals, and 355 plate appearances. I think Trixon Profar is going to play every single day and just give you like very solid all five category production. Going to get you some bags. He's not a 30 home run guy or whatever, but I think he can pop 20, decent batting average, and runs an RBI in an Atlanta lineup that I think, I say this every year, I think should be better than what we saw last year. I think it just all kind of goes very nicely for Jerkson Profar at this 190 ADP.
Yep. Nothing else to add there. It's a great floor play, and hopefully we see more, like a higher ceiling, but I think it's a great floor play in this late, this range. And another solid outfielder, to your point, like him and Ian Happ right next to each other. I love them both. Just for if you're needing to fill the positions, they're boring as hell, but you can pretty much write in your stat line is what it feels like with those.
Very similar projection, those two as well.
Yep. So a lot of good who would you rathers in this pocket of ADP. For me, my third one is an old trusty that I know you've liked in the past, probably still do, don't want to speak for you, but a guy that I keep getting in middle infield spots left and right is Dansby Swanson. He's going to be 32 years old, coming off a 24-20 season where he hit 244. We've seen 20 or more home runs in 4 out of 5 seasons, 16 or more in all 5. We've seen 18 to 20 stolen bases in 3 of the last 4 seasons. He pretty much hits 242 to 244 the last 3 seasons. So it's another one was like you can almost project them. If he's going to play nearly every day because he plays good defense at shortstop for the Cubs, and it's just like projections have him for, you know, low 20s, high teens steals with a 240 average, 241 average. And there's just a lot that Ryan and I love. We sound like broken records about just being able to pencil that production in. So Swanson, like if you somehow miss out on shortstop, if he's your shortstop one, it's not the end of the world. He actually still gives you close to 5 category production, I think, but – to me, he's a really strong middle infield option. If you don't like go Bryce Stott or someone else like that, Swanson fits that mold for me.
Yeah, I mean the other shortstops on this list and this entire pocket is Jacob Wilson, Xavier Edwards, and Connor Griffin. And so, like,
no, please.
I mean, you want to talk about floor and stability, especially in these kind of these deeper leagues, these 15 teamers. I feel like it's the same exact verse as last year with Dansby Swanson. We like him. He's stable, and there's a massive cliff right after him at shortstop.
Yep, just flip it and reverse it. All right, fades, Ryan. Fades. And I did not see this one coming. So what do you got here?
Why?
Wait, I'm being sarcastic. Joking.
Okay.
Yes.
It's been a long. I mean, I can't tell with you tonight. So
I'm keeping you on your toes, buddy.
So we're only going to do one fade for this. I think as you get further in the draft, I think folks are more interested in targets than fades. It's easy to fade some of these guys that they all have warts. But I'm fading the, since Abner Uribe is on this list, I'm fading the Abner Uribe Trevor McGill combo. We've talked about this, but it's just bizarre for two guys in the same bullpen to be going in like the top 160 picks. Like that just does not make any sense. Mathematically, it just doesn't work. I think if you take one of those guys, I don't really have a strong opinion either way on who is going to win the job. There are folks that are steadfast in the Trevor McGill camp. There are folks that are steadfast in the Abner Uribe camp. I don't really know. And honestly, I don't really care because I'm not taking either one, because you've got a 50-50 shot. You're drafting someone who's not a closer with your first 160 picks. Like, that's way too expensive to be taking that type of gamble. So I'm out on both of them.
Yeah, we're on the same page there. It's the I think Abner Uribe is the better reliever. Feels like Trevor McGill is going to get the job. It's just one of those weird situations that I'm not paying for either at their price points. And yeah, sure, the relieving pool is drying up as we get farther down, but that's just, again, why you have to pay for closing earlier. It's just the reality of the situation right now. So passing on both as well. For me, it's Gabriel Moreno. I just wanted to highlight him because we talked about, or I mentioned earlier, a lot of catchers in this range, a lot of catchers. And this is where it starts to dry up. But I want to highlight with Gabriel Moreno, a lot of people like him. I think his skill set is very good. It's his health is the problem. We haven't had over 385 plate appearances his entire career. He had 352 last year in his age 25 season. Batting average is fine. That's what he does. He is an Alejandro Kirk profile, is what I always say. Like last year, 10 home runs at 286. Like, that's great. It's also the most home runs of his career. He's hit 286 twice at 291. He had two stolen bases. It's 100% comes down to playing time with me with Gabriel Moreno. And when we're looking at catchers in this range, when you have the likes of Alejandro Kirk, who is in this range, you have Samuel Vasallo, where playing time is a question here. I didn't want to put him because I think I buried him enough so far. Francisco Alvarez, who, like, again, I believe if he plays Kyle Teal, who I love, and Carter Jansen, who I love. So when you throw Gabriel Moreno in this range and you have a bunch of catchers that should get playing time or have a bigger ceiling with limited playing time, to me, Gabriel Moreno is a fade in this pocket.
Okay, I like it. Yeah, I mean, give me Kyle Teal pretty much every time at the same price.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Poor man's JTR. Poor man's Goose. If you do Goose and the Teal, you can go, you know, duck hunting. It's a good time.
That's got to be the ultimate, folks. Like, side quest during the draft. Get a Goose and a Teal. Yep.
Print the shirts. Just telling you.
Who did we anoint the Gosling? Who's the baby Goose? Was that Teal too?
I think it was Teal. Teal was the baby Goose. Gosling, yes.
And I had no idea Teal was a bird.
It's a duck. That's why you go duck hunting.
Duck, whatever. Is a duck a bird? Should I know this?
Duck is a bird, but there's different types of ducks for duck hunters. I grew up in Northern California, massive duck hunting capital. I do not hunt. All of my friends do. But so I learned through them that, yes, teal is a special type of duck you can hunt. Yes. All right. Do you have any final thoughts here? You want to go listener questions?
Let's do listener questions.
All right. Let's get into the questions from the old Discord here. Matt says, I absolutely love the outfielders here. Can you survive not taking outfielders until this pocket? You can. I'd rather not have to get all of them here, but you can.
Yeah, I think ideally you'd like to have, and like I said, you just did this with one outfielder entering this pocket. Ideally, I'd have two. Going into this group, and then pepper this with two more outfielders, and you're kind of good to go. But I think you could swing it with one. I would not do zero. I would not do a zero outfield until this range. But it's just too much. Like, you can't get all the outfielders in this group unless you're doing an auction.
Yes, yeah. If you're doing an auction, you can have some fun in this range. But I'm with you. I'd have at least two if you can. Like, doing with just one was not ideal. Steve Brun says, what's the strongest position non-pitcher to target in this range? I think we say outfield.
Outfield with, I guess, a hat tip to, I'd say starting pitching. I just like a lot of these guys. So he said non-pitcher. That's right. Apologies. I should listen. Outfield. What's your second favorite position?
I would say it's first base.
Okay.
Because it's pretty much gone.
Yeah, you've got some. Yeah, you got Wilson Contreras, Burleson that we talked about at the top, and then a little bit later, Aranda and Torkelson. Yeah, that's fine. That's fine at first base if you wait.
Yeah, just my two cents. Non-zero chance says, why draft Holiday at the top of the pocket when you wait on Bryson Stott, Spider-Man mean? I think Ryan fully endorses that.
Oh, hell yeah. Just disappointed in the Jackson Holiday injury, man. You dodged a bullet on that.
Yep. Corbin says, two hitters and two pitchers you want the most in this range, and why is one of them Mackenzie Gore? We mentioned our targets already, but we did not talk about Mackenzie Gore. So we've mentioned two hitters and two pitchers already, but what do you – we've talked Mackenzie Gore. I love Mackenzie Gore. I'm also well aware the whip is terrifying, but one of these years he's going to go full Robbie Ray on us and be one of the gifts of the draft.
So that's the wish, right? That's the hope is, you do get that Robbie Ray ceiling because, it certainly could happen. That's a pretty damn good comp. We were all destroying the Mackenzie Gore whip projection, I think, on a Rico stream.
Yes.
On Sleeper in the Bust a few weeks ago. Projected for a 123 whip, yet has a career 1.4 whip. So do not believe that projection. That should be rare steak.
Better project a whip than Kyle Bradish, everybody. That's what started that. That's what started that. He was the one right in front of
him. Is it?
Yeah, that was what started the whole discussion. His on the aggregator, he was 38th, I think, and Bradish was 39th or something like that.
Yeah, we've had enough Kyle Bradish discourse.
Yes, we have. But I love Mackenzie Gore. Just man, oh man, that whip is a killer. But one day, it will change.
Yeah.
At SMMS79 says Moreno seemed to be coming on strong last season. Am I wrong for expecting that to continue? If he plays a full season, again, he's Alejandro Kirk, and that's great. I just haven't seen a full season, and I don't know if we ever will, unfortunately. But that's just me.
I like how we just didn't answer Corbin's question and just started talking about McKenzie.
No, I did. I said we've already named two hitters and two pitchers. We actually named more in our targets. No, all right.
Technically you're correct. Yes.
Yeah. But I gave him my Moreno thoughts. Do you agree, or are you against me on Gabriel Moreno?
Against is a tough call. Like I like there are certainly teams where I'd love to. I'm behind in batting average, need a second catcher. You just kind of take Moreno and hope that the power develops and hope he can last a full season. So I don't hate it. I'm just taking Kyle Teal instead.
Agreed. We did never mention Munetaka Murakami. I'm just gonna just give a teaser here for next Thursday's pockets of ADP. The Big Oak's a better grab than Murakami, but we'll talk about that next week.
That's Big Oak went ahead of Murakami in labor last night. I think two picks before. So
he's a better hitter.
There
is right
that. Actually, there was a third. It was an interesting third base run in labor. This is all off the top of my head, but it was Okamoto, Murakami, Royce Lewis, and then I took Matt Chapman.
So your kinda favorite fell to you.
All within like six or eight picks. It was a little
nice
third base mini run, but the room was aggressive. One of them was, of course, Tim McLeod. I forget.
Yeah.
McLeod took, he took one of Murakami or Okamoto. I forget which one, but shocker naturally. Of the year there.
Yeah. Naturally. That sounds about par for the course. Did you take Yamamoto early in the draft too? That seems like
that's something he goes for. I do not know off the top of my head.
But all right, any final thoughts on our third pocket of ADP 150 to 200?
No, I think, to kind of wrap it up, I think you can grab two outfielders and then grab one starting pitcher. I think you got a lot of really good options there. I think if you're in a bind, you can get one of the late first basemen, you can get a Bryson Stott if you're in a bind at those spots. Outside of that, maybe if you're in a bind for second catcher, but outside of that, it's tough on the hitting side. Tough for relievers. Like I like Dennis Santana. I don't know about Ryan Walker. We didn't really talk about him, but it's kind of like it's tough to time and get a reliever here. So starting pitcher outfield for me is the kind of the strengths of this pocket. And again, the purpose of these shows is to kind of build a draft plan from these middle rounds forward. And I think you've got enough options here. You can budget a couple outfielders and then a starter or two and come out of this range pretty good.
Yeah, no, I like some of the starting pitchers here. I have only taken a few as I primarily sit there in the outfield world. I've taken my third baseman usually in this range and that catcher too. Those are kind of my primary targets as I go through this pocket of the draft. So it's a lot more hitting centric for me in this range. But I will dab. Like I have a lot of Ranger Suarez in my life. That's a guy I'm a big fan of, but yeah, primarily a hitting pocket for me if I have it my way. But all right, we'll wrap it up there. Reminder to everybody, next Tuesday night, see Thursday, we'll be recording 250 to 300. Next Tuesday, March 3rd, Tout Wars. Ryan versus yours truly. Battle it out once again, and that'll be a special 8 p.m. Eastern start time. We'll remind you guys on Thursday for that, but that'll be next Tuesday. But this Thursday, pocket 200 to 250, pocket 4 of the ADP pockets. But that'll wrap us up. You can follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Entrick. And until next time, this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 323. Catch y'all later. Thank you.